welcome to Foodstuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're doing our second fictional foods episode.
And a lot of you probably from the title, but also you could guess what it is because so many people requested it after our first fictional food episode on Butterbeer.
Limbus!
Yes! We're going to pass the Limbus bread.
We're going to walk straight into Mordor.
Oh, no.
It's going to be harsh, but we're going to be so well fed for the journey.
That's true.
Yeah. Which hobbits would certainly appreciate. Also probably appreciating it are listeners including Kate, Erica, Crafty Viking, and Asha. Other people, I think, requested
so
it.
Many.
So many. I stopped recording names. I'm sorry. But thank all of you.
Yes. And I remember a listener, I think we read the email, but tried to make some Limbus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that one. Oh, that sounds great.
It's a difficult undertaking for sure.
It is. Mm-hmm. So Lord of the Rings is full of food culture.
And that's where Limbus is, by the way.
Oh, yes. Fran, we should probably mention that for people who aren't gigantic nerds.
Yeah, we're just like
nerds.
On such a nerd level, we just assume.
Yeah, yeah. But by J.R.R. Tolkien. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole book thing.
And a movie thing. And a TV show thing soon to come.
Oh, right. Yeah. But yeah, the books have a lot of food in them, partially because the hobbits that are kind of the main characters are really fond of eating.
Oh, yeah.
In the prologue to Fellowship of the Ring, which is the first book in the trilogy, Tolkien writes, "Their faces, the hobbits, were, as a rule, good-natured rather than beautiful, broad, bright-eyed, red-cheeked, and with mouths apt to laughter and to eating and drinking. And laugh they did, and eat, and drink, often and heartily, being fond of simple jests at all times, and of 6 meals a day when they could get them."
6 meals a day. I remember, I don't know how many of you listeners had a program called AR, Accelerated Reading, or something similar at school.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you got points for reading books, and when I was in fifth grade, I read Lord of the Rings, and I was so discouraged by how descriptive all the food was, and I love food, but I was like, what? This is a lot.
It's too much.
I can't. I'm going to be quizzed on this, and I won't be able to respond.
There's a lot of detail in the books,
absolutely.
Mostly about like trees and running,
and mushrooms.
Yeah, there's a lot about yeah. In the books, you can count those 6 meals as breakfast, morning tea or levensies, lunch, afternoon tea, supper, and dinner. But the 7 that Pippin rattles off in the Fellowship movie are breakfast, second breakfast, elevensies, luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner, and supper. I'm not sure how the two of those got, supper and dinner, got switched around, but.
Future episode.
Ooh.
Just on that.
Oh, I think we could. There's a lot of debate about the meaning of these terms on the internet. But either way, yes, hobbits like food.
Mm-hmm.
And the food that they like best is a kind of earthy Victorian English countryside type food. The sort of things that you can grow and cook locally from a temperate climate. Mushrooms, as we said, mm-hmm. Bacon, beer, honey, apples, blackberries, eggs, butter, cheese, bread, scones, sweet and savory pies, potatoes, turnips and carrots, roast meats, stews, pickles, you know, stuff like that.
I might make 6 meals out of all that food if I could as well.
I would make 1 meal out of all of that food 6 times a day.
Ooh, a hobbit meal.
Yes.
New trend.
Yes. In the Two Towers, the narrator explains, "All hobbits, of course, can cook, for they begin to learn the art before their letters, which many never reach."
Of course they can cook.
And how this type of food probably came about in the books. Tolkien was born in 1892 and grew up in a sort of idyllically rural, old-fashioned hamlet near the sort of grimly urban industrial center of Birmingham. He once wrote to a fan that he was basically from the Shire and that, quote, "I am in fact a hobbit in all but size."
So does this mean that Birmingham was like Mordor?
I kind of think it might have been.
I think so.
It's from all the descriptions from the areas that he grew up. It sounds like.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry about it, Birmingham. I'm sure it's lovely. I've never been. It is also posited that Tolkien, being something of an English nationalist, created the Lord of the Rings universe and its peoples and languages as sort of a substitute for the unified mythology that England lacks. England having, you know, such a diverse and kind of turbulent history with a lot of different peoples. Tolkien wrote in a letter to Milton Waldman in 1951, a few years before Fellowship was first published, "I was from early days grieved by the poverty of my own beloved country. It had no stories of its own, bound up in its tongue and soil, not of the quality that I sought, and found as an ingredient in legends of other lands. There was Greek and Celtic and Romance, Germanic, Scandinavian and Finnish, which greatly affected me, but nothing English, saved for impoverished chapbook stuff." So he decided to write some books.
That he did. That he did. And I have to say, when we chose this topic, I thought it would be simple. I don't know how you felt, Lauren.
I think everything's going to be simple.
Oh, it is so not simple. I was reading Elvish lore and so overwhelmed. And I liked Lord of the Rings, and I still like Lord of the Rings, but wrote a lot. He did a lot of... Of
back matter.
Yes.
If y'all have never experienced trying to read like the Silmarillion and stuff like that, yeah. there's universes upon universes.
Yeah.
Of writing about, yes, this yeah. already very dense series.
Exactly.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Of course, being an adventure series, the main Lord of the Rings, though, our hobbits couldn't always count on those civilized 6 or 7 meals per day. They had to make do with what they could travel with or forage for. Though Samwise Gamgee notably brings some basic cooking supplies all the way to Mordor with him. A couple pots, a wooden spoon, a cooking fork, some salt. But yes, most of the time the Fellowship does not have time for cooking. Which brings us to Lembas.
It does. Lembas, sometimes called elven bread or whey bread, as you may have gathered, is a bread created by elves to sustain you when traveling. You know, like a protein bar type thing to keep you satisfied for when you decide to hike up Mount Doom one of those days.
Oh, yeah.
Or many months, many days upon days. From the novel The Fellowship of the Ring, Tolkien wrote, "Eat little at a time and only at need, for these things are given to serve you when all else fails. The cakes will keep sweet for many, many days if they are unbroken and left in their leaf wrappings as we have brought them. One will keep a traveler on his feet for a day of long labor, even if he be one of the tall men of Minas Tirith."
Ah.
Yeah.
So it's way better than a protein bar.
Way better. And the leaf wrappings are Malorn leaves, by the way.
Malorn trees. The plural of which is Malorn.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Because Tolkien. They are the primary trees that make up the forests of Lothlorien, where the Fellowship party picks up their Lembas. Mm-hmm. They're huge trees with this smooth gray-silver bark, and the leaves are green on top and silver underneath. If you were wondering, they were originally from a neighboring continent to Middle-earth called Mon. The inhabited lands there called Valinor, inhabited by the Valar, which are sort of godlike people, and elves brought the trees with them to other places from there. Galadriel herself planted the seeds that would become the Malorn trees in Lothlorien.
See what we had to deal with?
It's just, I was on Lord of the Rings wiki pages for just days, it felt like.
Yeah.
it's a beautiful place to be, but anyway.
It really is, yes. So. And Lothlorien is where the elves are. By the way, if we didn't mention that. And Galadriel is
an elf lady.
Yeah. Anyway, as far as appearance goes, Lembas are brownish on the outside and cream-colored on the inside. They were described as being sort of wafer-like and pretty tasty with a bit of sweetness. Gimli, the dwarf, claims they are better than cram, which is another thing I had to look up. It's a biscuit made by men, and it's also better than honey cakes, which are made by the Bjornings.
Yes.
I apologize for that accent I put on there. To confuse matters, Lembas is written as being made with corn, but probably not actually corn, but something like wheat, because Tolkien was British, and the British call corn maize and grains corn.
Oh.
Okay. Yes.
Perfect. Lembas also contains the fruit, a.k.a. the nut of the Malorn tree, which we know is silvery on the outside, but we don't know much else about. It's probably a good source of protein, though, and therefore a good thing to put in a fancy elven protein bar.
Yes, and the recipe of Lembas was something kind of proprietary for the elves. Very rarely did they share it with any non-elves. And evil or corrupted creatures, like, I don't know, Gollum, they found Lembas, along with most products of the elves, as offensive. Gollum outright would not even try the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Lembas comes from what we outside of the Lord of the Rings call elven, but to be more specific, the Sindarian word for waybread. In another Elvish language, Kenya, Lembas is called Koimas, or life bread. So, yeah. Sindarian is it's like a subset of elven.
Elven languages.
Man, we're really nerding it up.
Yeah.
Whew. All right.
Okay. Let's get into some of the potential real history basis.
And real fake history.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But first, let's get into a quick word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. And or sorry that you're being associated with all of this nerdery.
And speaking of nerdery, dial it up a bit.
Oh, wait. What level are we already on?
Oh, I know.
Okay.
We're twisting that knob even further. So let's talk some in-book Lord of the Rings Lembas history, or what I like to call in the outline real fake history. So in Elvish lore, the creation of Lembas goes way back to the Vala Yavanna. Vala is the singular form of Valar, which Lauren mentioned earlier, and they were these powerful beings whose purpose was to give order to the world. Yavanna was one of these Valar called the Giver of Fruits and or the Lady of the Earth, and as the name suggests, she was in charge of planting and growing the first plants.
Yeah. Makes sense, yeah.
It does. Once the elves made their great journey to Aman, and there's a whole thing about this. Lord of the Rings fans know exactly what the Great Journey is, but it's a thing. Yavanna brought...
they went there, believe us.
Yes. Yes. They brought them special corn. Again, probably wheat to plant, and this special corn most likely was and is the key ingredient to Lembas. The Queen of Doriath, Melian, had the recipe first, later passing it to Galadriel, along with other elves. And as we said, she was the first Galadriel to plant it and give it to the Fellowship. And she gave them quite a bit.
How much, though? And
whether
that would have survived for their entire journey.
Oh, we're going to talk about it.
We are.
Yeah, there's numbers involved.
There's math. Meanwhile, back in what some people might call the real world, Tolkien was Roman Catholic, and some readers have suggested that Lembas is directly influenced by the bread or the wafer part of the Eucharist, the Holy Communion. You know, the whole "this wine is my blood, this bread is my body" kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially influenced by the Holy Communion that's given as a part of a practitioner's last rites, which is called the Viaticum, and means something like provision for a journey. In this practice, the Viaticum is meant to ensure the dying person's journey into eternal happiness. And Lembas in the stories is also said to be more effective during fasting and to feed the will as much as the body. So totally lines up. Tolkien acknowledged this connection, but said that it was unintentional.
Hmm. Well, back to some numbers, some science, some real world making of Lembas, if it's possible. You can find a lot of recipes for it online.
Oh, yeah.
There's even an Etsy store I ran into where you can buy some, and in the description, the shop owner notes, Malorn leaves not included.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Most of the recipes are for something like a shortbread or scone.
Which sounds delicious. And they generally include nuts or nut meal, plus some vanilla and cinnamon, which most of the bakers apologize for. Since they're tropical plants and thus, you know.
It wouldn't be in there.
Probably wouldn't be in there, but you never know what elves get up to.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
In the films, the prop for Lembas, bread, was similar to an unsweetened shortbread. The primary goal is to make something that looked and crumbled like Lembas and was also edible. Acting is key for actors. Because of this, Sean Astin, who played Samwise Gamgee, reported that the taste was quite terrible on the DVD commentary. Also in the films, Lembas was redundantly called Lembas bread, since the introductory scene with the explanation of what Lembas is was cut out of the first film. Though, It is in the extended cut, but isn't everything.
I kind of, yep.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was like 4 hours long.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, it did go on to play a pivotal role in later films, notably when Gollum crumbles up Frodo and Sam's supply of Limbus and frames Sam by planting crumbs on his cloak.
Oh.
Tricksy.
So tricksy.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a study, Annie?
Of course there's a study. Of course there is. From Sky Rossetti and Krisho Maharan out of the University of Leicester, who set out to determine how much Limbus the Fellowship would have needed for a 92-day journey if Limbus was their only sustenance. To do this, the metabolic rates derived from a previous study were used for each of the species involved. And yes, there was a previous study that came to the conclusion that the daily calorie consumption for a 34-year-old male would be 1,818.61 calories for a hobbit, 1,702.2 for a human, and 1,416.95 for elves. Whew. From that, and assuming that the group had never got separated.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of assumptions here. That Frodo had never been captured.
Uh-huh.
Boromir had never died.
Spoilers!
Oh, I'm sorry. And that Gandalf had never done his thing and tangoed with the Balrog. The Fellowship would have needed a collective 16,147.68 calories a day to make the journey.
I love the points. I love that there's,
I know, it's so specific.
Fractions. That's beautiful. Anyway, please continue.
Given that a single piece of Limbus can sustain a man for an entire day, and taking into account the amount of time and difficulty spent daily on travel, there's a whole chart included. There's a whole chart for this. Limbus was determined to be 2,638.5 calories.
Like a piece of Limbus. Uh-huh. That's how many calories are in, like, a unit.
Yes.
Okay.
This means that to make the trip to Mordor, the Fellowship would need 675 pieces of Limbus. At least. Because hobbits have big appetites.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about that. But they're small and durable, both Limbus and hobbits. But here we're talking about Limbus. So in theory, fictionally plausible. Or plausible fictionally.
Yeah.
Same.
It's sure.
The article ended with questions for further thought, such as the gluten content and possible side effects from living off Limbus for several weeks. I'm sure more research is forthcoming.
The name of this study, by the way, is Simply Walking into Mordor. How much Limbus would the Fellowship have needed?
Oh, man.
Nerds.
It's great. The chart blew my mind. I also found a forum with debate about the plausibility of Limbus without magic. There's a whole nother argument there, but it's generally agreed that it must be magic. Although someone went and bought up Clark's Law to argue that it isn't.
Oh.
Anyway, it went pretty in-depth as to the protein, carb, and fat content you'd need and how you'd make it using medieval techniques, because of course. And the widely accepted conclusion was that you'd need some elven magic or nanobots. That was the other theory. Also, one of the comments was, Limbus is actually pizza. And it just made me happy.
I never thought about that before, but man, Limbus could just be pizza.
It really could be.
Wow. Just to give you some scope here, if you assume that a piece of Limbus is about the size and weight of like a large cookie or a slice of bread that is like about 50 grams or so, like 2,600 calories is just an insane number of calories.
Yeah.
For that amount of food, like even pure lard only has about 450 calories per a unit of that size.
Mm-hmm.
So elven magic is what I'm betting on.
Yeah. I mean, if you think the daily recommended value of calories for the average adult is 2,000.
Yeah.
So that's more than that in one tiny cookie thing. So, yeah.
Elves. They're great.
Elves. All right.
We also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other foods that appear in Lord of the Rings. But first, we're going to take another quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes. So, in the books, elven food is generally described as being kind of magical, sort of unearthly delicious. Pippin remembers of one road supper with elves, that there was bread surpassing the savor of a fair white loaf to one who was starving, and fruits sweet as wild berries and richer than the tended fruits of gardens, and a fragrant draught cool as a clear fountain, golden as a summer afternoon. Draught, draft, can you say it both ways?
I've always said draught, so I'm going to say yes.
Perfect.
I'm going to agree.
That's lovely.
That description sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Food is important to this universe, as we said. So some other nutritious/magical foods from the Lord of the Rings universe include the restorative Ent draught,
which Merry and Pippin drink in The Two Towers, the second book, while they're hanging out with some Ents, which are a tree people. Mm-hmm. There's two versions of the draught, actually. One is refreshing and makes them feel all tingly, and the other is richer and feels more satisfying. Both are clear liquids that heal the hobbits' wounds and even make them grow a little bit, despite being fully grown hobbits already. It's said that because of this Ent draught, they are at least 3 inches taller than any other hobbit.
3 inches?
I know, that's a lot for a hobbit. They're only like 2 to 3 feet.
Man, if I grew 3 inches... that'd be a lot for me. That's nothing to sneeze at.
I know, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm. There's also the Orc Vitality Drink, which is also called Grog. And Lauren seems to be a fan of this one.
Okay, well, all right. So you wrote the thing about the next party. That's all your note.
Well, I must have had a crazy party after that because I don't recall writing it.
In our notes, it says, which is also called Grog and needs to be at my next party. And it sounds more like a painkiller than an actual, like, restorative, like the Ent draught. It's also mentioned in The Two Towers and given to Pippin and is described as a burning liquid. When Pippin drinks it, he felt a hot, fierce glow flow through him. The pain in his legs and ankles vanished. He could stand.
Wow. So, I mean, yeah.
It's more like a keep you going kind of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I probably just wrote that because of the name, but that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
This next one looks complicated to pronounce.
Miravor.
Lauren just runs with it. Miravor. Yes. Obviously.
That's basically the elvish equivalent of mead.
Ooh.
And then we've got, of course, the aforementioned cram and honey cake.
Yeah, of course. You need no explanation.
And in case you didn't know, because I, being so stolidly American, did not, Second Breakfast and Elevensies aren't just funny-sounding things that hobbits do in Hobbiton. They are real meals, or like snacks or refreshments, really, that real humans eat.
What?
Yes! Elevensies existed in America for a while, in the mid-1800s. It was actually more like a late-morning whiskey break. It was the precursor to the modern coffee break. Americans drank like a whole lot of whiskey back then, an average of half a pint per day at all times of the day.
Oh, wow.
It comes from the English tradition of elevensies, which is a mid-morning tea and light refreshment break.
So they were doing tea and we were like, let's add whiskey?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty American.
That sounds pretty American, yeah, okay. Especially 1800s-ish. Mm-hmm. It's not to be confused, however, with the Chilean tradition of la once, meaning the 11, which is a sort of tea or coffee and cold snack that's served between 5 and 9 p.m., which is probably rooted in English traditions from settlers circa the 1800s, and partially, possibly, as a code for let's go sneak some booze, which originated in booze-restricted mining towns. The booze in question was aguardiente, which is spelled with 11 letters, so that might be.
Oh.
I find that sort of tenuous, but...
Yeah.
Second breakfast also is a thing that has happened in America, or used to happen in America. I've never heard of anyone. No one has ever said the word second breakfast to me outside of Hobbit-related conversations.
Me either. I've had a second breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
But I've never been like, I'm going to have a second breakfast.
Right. Or let's all get together and have one.
Right.
As a group unrelated to Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Although Americans picked it up a little bit reluctantly following European traditions. The French, Viennese, Russians, and Germans all have second breakfasts, which are kind of social breakfasts that are taken with friends or coworkers mid-morning. In Germany, it's sometimes been called a Gabelfrühstück, a.k.a. a fork breakfast.
A fork breakfast?
So something that you, like, sit down and, like, eat with a fork as opposed to something that you just, like, grab and run with.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, just Gabelfrühstück is, like, the best word.
Yeah.
I mean, most German is kind of the best word.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, that is Lembas and a few other foods from Middle Earth thrown in there for fun.
Uh-huh.
I hope that this was satisfactory for you that requested it, and I hope that for people who don't know Lord of the Rings, we didn't completely lose you.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean...
Yeah, fictional foods. If you all have any other fictional foods that you would like us to talk about, please do write in and let us know. If you hadn't noticed, Annie and I get excited about geek stuff.
So, we do. Yeah. We'll take any excuse to talk about it. And you guys definitely gave us an excuse with this one.
Yes.
So thank you. And speaking of writing in,
yeah,
it's time for listener mail.
Yay.
Okay. So Chris wrote in, I'm just getting a chance to listen to your quiche episode and got a chuckle out of the real men don't eat quiche thing because it reminded me of an early experience with my then girlfriend, now wife. I was always a good and adventurous cook, but one who knew nothing about cooking in terms of names. My entire cooking education coming from my Southern grandmother and Justin Wilson, which is probably why the word onion has about 8 syllables for me. So one day after holiday, we were discussing what to do with the extra pie crust we had in the box. Then I said, I've got it. I'll make egg pie. We have bacon and egg pie, to which my girlfriend deadpanned, so you're making quiche. I had no idea what quiche was, only having known the real men don't eat quiche meme. Then I got really confused because egg pie is like the manliest food in the world. Eggs, meat, cheese, in a pie. I could hear Tim Allen's 90s sitcom character grunting, just listing the ingredients. Fast forward to 13 years of marriage and egg pie has become a regular part of our diet.
Aww.
We've heard a lot of stories about this whole quiche, gendering of quiche, and that is definitely something we want to come back to, the gendering of foods.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just found a really good article about all of that on Quartz, I think, the other day. I might have linked it in our Twitter. But more listener mail. Lisa, I hope I'm not butchering your name. If there's a third pronunciation that I'm not aware of, I hope that one of those two covered it. Anyway, wrote in about pesticides after we touched on them in our cranberry episode. I am currently in college and study all about crop production, including all the biology and chemistry behind it, so I decided to write in with some information. One of the first things is that organic producers are still allowed to use pesticides, but they are considered natural and non-synthetic. Don't let these words fool you, because honestly, these organic pesticides can be much more dangerous than the synthetically produced conventional ones. Not all organic productions use these, but really the organic name is just a label slapped on things to make them more expensive when they are not proven to be any safer or nutritionally healthier. Moving on to the pesticide residues, the amount of allowed residues are strictly regulated and produce can be thrown out. These residue rates are so low that they should not affect humans. Keep in mind that it takes years of safety testing before a new pesticide is ever released, and many of these tests include toxicity to humans, native animals, and the ecosystem. When something is classified as a possible carcinogen, take that with a grain of salt. Common substances like caffeine are classified as such, yet most adults can't do without it. Also, sometimes things are misclassified, such as the recent case of the World Health Organization Cancer Agency purposefully editing out non-carcinogenic findings of glyphosate.
Yeah.
So, that's basically, thank you so much, Eliza or Lisa, for writing in about that. That's kind of a good rundown of what I had understood from light research.
Right.
And Annie and I definitely want to do a whole episode about all of that organic shenanigans in the future, because it's really annoying.
It is.
That people are being told to, you know, do the right thing, the best thing. And it's the only thing to be healthy for your families. And yeah.
And also, I just wanted to shout out all the Australian listeners.
Yes.
Oh, man. You did not let us down.
I know.
Sent in so many clips of not only the pun from the Vegemite episode, but also other words that we mispronounced, but in the nicest way possible. And
yes,
we got such a kick out of it. Maybe we'll make a clip.
Oh,
of them.
Oh, that would be the best.
Yes. Thank you so much for that. It was great.
If you would similarly like to get in touch, you can do that thing.
Yes. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at FoodstuffHSW. We're also on Instagram at Foodstuff. We post things sometimes. Recent vacation photos. We took an unofficial field trip down to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
We drank some butterbeer. It was delicious.
Did.
Thank you, Annie, for planning that.
Had to.
Also, thank you to our audio producer, Dylan Fagan. He's a pretty excellent human person with a very sharp sweater. And we hope to hear from y'all, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.